And then following that, we're going to have the flag salute. And we don't have a student tonight because they're on summer break. So I'll do it tonight. If everyone could turn and join me in the salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have the roll call, please?
Here.
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 Here. And we're moving now to the agenda review. And at this time, the City Council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Any announcements or changes? Okay. Then I'll entertain a motion.
Move that we proceed with the agenda as published.
I'll second that.
Moved by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, seconded by Councilmember Bright. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. That will stay with the order of the day. And the next part is ceremonial. We don't have the kids here tonight, but this
Mayor,
is a good one, too.
Sorry. I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah.
Would you care to hear the announcements from closed session?
That would be a good idea. Let's have closed session announcements.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get into the ceremonial.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, members of the public, on June 2nd, Council met in closed session on three items. Met on three items. Two were negotiation with instruction for labor negotiators, one on a CIU, one on Grover Beach Police Officers Association. The last one was existing litigation, Santa Maria Valley water litigation. No reportable actions were taken in closed session.
Thank you. All right, now we'll go to the fun part, the ceremonial. This one is certificates of appreciation for the Spring Garden Tour participants, and our Parks and Rec Program Director Petker is going to present certificates, and I believe that Nora O'Donnell is also going to work on that.
And improve their own outdoor spaces. What's best about this event is the way it brings the community together and enables residents to share their creativity and hard work with their neighbors. We had a beautiful sunny day with guests from all over the Central Coast and from out of the area. Nominations for the gardens were accepted through the middle of May. Some were self-nominated and some were nominated by other residents. Each commissioner was responsible for choosing gardens for the preview tour and then working at one of the chosen gardens. That helped to free up the homeowner to answer questions and extol the virtues of their space. A highlight this year were the gardens planted with varieties of low water and drought tolerant plants. For example, several water feature fountains were transformed into succulent gardens, made for some pretty spaces. So, to recognize the homeowners who graciously opened their outdoor spaces for display, we'd like all of the garden tour resident home owners come on up, if you will, so we can recognize you. You can all come as a group. Husbands are invited.
There you go.
Okay, we'll be presenting these in the order that they were on the agenda. So, the first one is for 329 North 7th Street. This petite, stunning front yard boasts a colorful garden centerpiece of a beautiful sago palm surrounded with mounds of succulents, whimsical art, and flowering perennials. It was a true work of art. And that was Candida Batita. Right? You can sit down or you can stand up with us. And then we'll take a picture of the whole group if we want. Okay. The next one is our council member, Jeff Lee, and Mary Moyers Lee. This striking home and garden just gone through a complete facelift in the past year. It includes new stucco, windows, paint, fascia, stone, and many more upgrades. The transformation of this beautiful home and garden was totally designed by the homeowners, including the welcoming sunken garden with fire pit and bronze sculptures. So if you miss this one, all you have to do is drive by. You can see it. The next one is for Bob Cotner at 141 North 14th. We dubbed this one Monarchville because he has really put in a lot of milkweed plants, which are the plants that monarch butterflies lay their eggs on. And upon the egg hatching, the caterpillar then devours this toxic plant. And that actually helps protect them from other predators. But there's all kinds of beautiful succulents in there as well, and a hummingbird. bird tree, an umbrella tree. It was just a magnificent garden. And you can also see this one from the street if you drive by his house. So, next one is for Lisa Flitch, a 1442 Atlantic City Avenue. We could tell lots of love and hard work went into designing and creating this space. It's a drought-resistant garden. Homeowner renovated the garden with river rock, various succulents, protea, and star jasmine that climbs up the front fence line. And that it's a tribute to doing it on your own. Good job. This next one is 931 Margarita Avenue, and it's Tim and Malaya Quirk. They dubbed this Welcome to Fantasy Island. This charming sunken garden is not only beautiful with blooming, I'm not going to sure if I'm going to say this right, etchiums, Mexican sage, leucodendrons, and many other gorgeous perennials. Of course, he's a horticulturist, correct?
Yes.
At Cal Poly. So there's lots of things on here I can't pronounce. but they did most of the work themselves, and they created a space that their family and friends truly enjoy. Okay, this one is for Yvonne and Rodit Batida. Oh, she already sat down. Did we already give her first? Okay. Oh, okay. Different person. I'm sorry. Okay, so we passed that one. But that was a beautiful garden, too. And this next one is for Connie Main at 1239 Aberdeen Court. Now, this one was designed and maintained by the homeowner, and her love of the garden is obvious by the abundance of gorgeous flowering plants, water features, and whimsical arrangements. The front yard is drought-resistant with various colorful succulents, and due to a tricky spiral staircase, visitors were only invited to peer over the fence to the sunken, enchanted garden below. So it was a beautiful space, but we were afraid of liability issues, to be honest, so we didn't let them go down there. But it's truly an enchanted garden. And for Dennis Nolman at 1220 San Sorrento Court. This home has actually been on the tour a couple of other times, and each year there's something new. It's a gardener's delight. The front garden holds an abundance of flowering perennials and roses, the multiple planters brimming with dahlias, lilies, geraniums, alstroemerias, and many more beautiful blossoming plants. You stroll along the garden path. Her house is always open every year for the plant exchange. Does a fabulous job. We have the master gardeners come out and do their thing and answer questions for people. So we really appreciate her attendance and cooperation and all. So, Mayor, would you like to say anything?
I have to say, I think this year it was better than ever before. I had a fantastic time. It was just really fun to do, and I walked most of it. So it was good exercise as well as being a treat. So thank you, all of you.
I forgot also to mention the Voth family. They are the ones that bought the community garden from the city, and they've turned it into just a beautiful spot for people. They actually rent out some of the spaces and do a lot of the work themselves. And if you get a chance to see that, it's up on Brighton Avenue, just past Ramona Garden Park. So if you want to go check that out. And Debbie, do you want to say anything? No? Okay. Thank you very much.
This one's always special to me because my mother actually got one of these awards when she first moved to town, and it was really the highlight of her move here. Next on our agenda, we have public communications. And at this point, any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot act on any items not on the agenda. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward? And if you could give us your name and your city of residence. Thank you.
Hello again, I'm Kay Rusin, and I live in Grover Beach. And thank you, first of all, number one, our park. I live in the Golden West area. Our park is looking much better.
Good.
The landscaping, and we look forward to new concrete. Anyway, I'm here about the water situation.
Is that on, is that the one that's on the agenda?
Yeah.
Can you, will you be able to wait until, are we taking that, wait a minute.
Next.
Yeah, go ahead and speak now. I just, unless you'd rather hear the staff report before you speak. I'll give you that one, that choice.
Okay, I'll wait.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone who'd like to speak on anything that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council, and we are moving to the declaration of the water shortage, Stage 3, and our Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, will be conducting this one.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Thank you for the introduction. In 2010, the City Council adopted the Urban Water Management Plan, and a component of that was an updated water shortage contingency plan that deals with times like this, where we have a defined drought. The water shortage contingency plan is used to define water shortage conditions and appropriate stages of action, and it ranges from a minor water shortage as a stage one, continuing through a stage four, which is defined as a critical water shortage condition. Looking at water supply this year, rain gauge measurements between April of 2013 and March of 2014 recorded below average rainfall. The rainfall was about 33% of benchmark, and storage behind Lopez Dam is about 56% of capacity as of March, which is a while ago. In accordance with the contingency plan, staff uses a average annual rainfall beginning with the first year rainfall falls below 65% of the benchmark to determine the appropriate stage of action. For the last 3 years, rainfall has fallen below the benchmark. So staff also consider other factors identified in the contingency plan, including city well levels and indications of seawater intrusion. Recent measurements in a number of wells along the coast indicate that water levels are just above sea level in most of the near-coast wells. And if you remember back to 2009, this is similar to the condition preceding measurements of increased salt water intrusion back in 09. So this information collectively meets the criteria for the contingency plan for declaration of a stage three water shortage. And a stage three water storage declaration would invoke services without a quick-acting shutoff nozzle would be prohibited, and operation of any ornamental fountain or car wash would be prohibited unless the water is recirculated. Depending on the duration and severity of the water shortage, and at the discretion of the City Council, mandatory prohibitions could also include prohibiting water use for planning any new landscaping, or limiting landscape watering to specific days of the week, and discontinuing operation of all fountains. In addition, the contingency plan indicates that the following measures and prohibitions become mandatory during a Stage 3 declaration. Well, we're required to notify all customers of the water shortage, required to mail information to all customers explaining the importance of water conservation. We are required to provide technical information to customers on means to promote water use efficiency. We're required to develop a media campaign to promote water conservation, to develop or expand water conservation programs such as our current low-flow toilet rebate program. And the last two items include increasing rates or lowering water rate tiers. And staff is not recommending either of these at this time, the last two items. According to the contingency plan, violation of mandatory prohibitions will result in penalties. Furthermore, it states that a reduction in water use of 10% will be required during a Stage 3 water shortage. The Public Works Director is responsible for determining if individual accounts are meeting the required 10% water use reduction goal and to apply penalties for failure to comply with the prohibitions and reduction goals. Staff is recommending the following additional steps if council were to implement a stage three water shortage. They include directly notifying large water users of the pending reduction goals and penalties, to offering large water users direct assistance in complying with mandatory prohibitions, measuring the means to actually determine a 10% reduction would be to measure water use reduction in comparison to water use during the same billing period of the previous year, and that could be found on a customer's individual water bill. And, of course, the city would be required to meet the same reduction goals on all of our parks and public facilities. I'm recommending that staff would report back to council on the status of water use reduction and water supply conditions at regular intervals during the duration of the Stage 3 water shortage. And ultimately, if we fail to meet the goal, that we come back to council and consider implementing additional measures such as the water rate or tier adjustments. In accordance with the contingency plan, a public hearing is required prior to council's determination of the appropriate stage of water shortage. As a side note, staff has been working collaboratively with other agencies in the region to develop common actions in response to this drought. Actions include identifying common water use prohibitions, identifying ways to share water resources that might preserve the health of our groundwater basin in particular, and working together to identify emergency response plans should this drought continue well into next year. I'd like to identify some fiscal impacts associated with this. The Stage 3 water shortage declaration will require significant amounts of staff time to implement. Staff is recommending hiring a temporary employee to administer the program if council chose to declare a Stage 3 water shortage. In addition, mailing notices to all water customers will cost approximately $5,000, possibly even more than $5,000 to get all those notices out. It's unlikely, in staff's opinion, that penalties will offset the additional costs to implement a Stage 3 water shortage condition. And so it's expected also that water revenues would decrease in direct proportion to consumption reductions. It may become necessary later in the year to implement a rate adjustment at some future time in order to offset an expected deficit to the water enterprise fund. In addition, there will be costs associated with reducing the city's own water consumption by the 10% goal. Many of these costs could be appropriately paid via the Water Conservation Fund, and an estimate of needed changes would be in the range of $5,000 to $15,000, primarily for irrigation system improvements and some reductions in existing turf areas. I just wanted to hit the highlights in this report tonight because I'm sure you had a lot of questions. Staff considered really the following alternatives. Council could continue the existing Stage 2 water shortage condition, which has voluntary prohibitions and none of the penalties.
So it's going to reduce our income. And I assume that would be approximately 10%. Do you have any idea what figure that is?
I have not done that calculation, but
okay. But it will reduce our income.
Yeah, it would be directly proportional.
In addition to that, you're recommending, or at least requesting, that we hire a part-time employee to oversee and work on this reduction.
That is correct.
Then why are we putting off a rate increase? We're going to lose money. It's going to cost us money. We're going to hire a new employee. We've been working at bare bones for the last several years, and I'm wondering why you're recommending that we not initiate a rate increase at this time.
Council Member Nichols, it looks to me like perhaps the city manager has a response to that one.
Yes, Madam Mayor. It could, in fact, be that we'll need to come back and request an adjustment. The reason we're not doing that presently is for a couple of reasons. First of all, while you can anticipate there'll be a reduction in revenue, there will also be some reduction in costs. There are pumping costs, treating costs, et cetera, that will also be slightly less. It is, until we get into this a little bit, it is a bit difficult to for us to project what that rate adjustment may need to be to ensure we're covering our costs. At this point, we have still to essentially develop the position that would be the part-time position, so there's additional cost factors that we haven't determined yet. It'll probably take a few months for us to take a look at the information that is resulting from an adjustment, and then we'd be in a better position to make a recommendation regarding a rate adjustment. And as you know, that requires a 218 hearing, which is also a 45-day notice period.
Okay, thank you. The other question I have is, what do we, you mentioned large water users and that there's some exceptions that may apply to them or you may work with them. What do you consider a large water user? And I'm trying to figure out who we have in this community that would fall into that category.
They're pretty easy to identify. We, through the account billing system, know the size of the water meters. So anybody with a 2-inch meter and larger would clearly be a large water use customer. And a 10% reduction with those type of customers would be really significant. Of course, the city would be one of the large water customers. The schools would be a large water customer. Laundries, car washes, water treatment facilities.
Well, we don't have any of those within the city. Well, we do have water treatment.
We have both Culligan and we have another Central Coast Water that provides high quality water for industrial purposes.
Okay, well, I was just curious who fell into that. Thank you very much, Greg. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Lee.
Thank you. Good staff report, Greg. I had a quick question with regards to the penalties and enforcement and the potential for the extra position moving forward. Would that be on top of the civil engineering tech position that was approved as part of this budget?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be with regards to that. And then one other question is, how would people that have already been conserving for any number of years continue to try and reduce their water even further? I mean, if people have been very diligent, and we received a letter or an email effectively asking this question, is we've been conserving for so long, how much more can we conserve, and is there a method, or is it up to the council and with your recommendations to come up with a plan to say, okay, if you've been conserving and you're meeting the state required or state minimum usage per day and you're not above that, would you be exempt from the penalties and enforcement, or is that a program that we would need to discuss how to move forward with?
You know, it's been one of the questions that I've been wrestling with. I've been very fortunate to have a lot of good input from other staff members, including the city manager and the city attorney. We've really wrestled with this to determine if there would be a sort of a standardized approach. And I think the conclusion is there really isn't a standardized approach to considering this. There are going to be cases where the new staff person and ultimately myself will have to look at certain water accounts and see if both sides of it assist in actually further water reductions, even with customers who may be already doing a great job, and then at the same time use my discretion and hopefully good judgment to determine if in fact there's a breaking point in terms of feasibility.
Okay, so it sounds like from that perspective the it would be kind of an in-place program and then with a kind of a verification by yourself. And then would there be some opportunity if someone didn't agree with you, you said yes, that would then go to the city manager or planning commission or come to us? Or?
There's a standardized process for that, for items within the municipal code or within my jurisdiction otherwise. ultimately my decision can be appealed.
Okay.
I can, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. A couple of my questions were similar to Mayor Pro Tem Lee's. So just to kind of continue on with those. So folks that have already made some major conservation efforts, let's say that those have happened in the recent past. So we're talking about the measurement period being measured against last year. So say from June of 13 and June of 14 is going to be the measurement period, pretty much?
It would be each billing cycle would be compared to the billing cycle of the previous year, for example.
Right? Okay. Very good. So that could I think that's going to be helpful to at least to the folks that have approached me anyway. I know that's been that really has been probably the biggest concern that I've heard. I can't read my own scribble. So then folks that may have seen that people that walk the neighborhoods and daily, and they see folks or properties that are not adhering to or complying with the conservation requirements. What are they to do? Is there going to be some sort of will there be some kind of criteria? I mean, some information for them to report that kind of activity to the city?
We have a code enforcement hotline that would already be in place and appropriate for that.
Okay.
And certainly if we were notified, we would
Can you talk a little louder?
I'm sorry. I do tend to talk quietly. I'll repeat that. We have a code enforcement hotline already that residents can call into and notify the Public Works Department of suspected code violations. So that would provide immediate follow-up by Public Works staff.
Okay, very good. You know, I think I'm just going to let you. Did you have questions? Okay, so while I try to figure out what I really, really want to ask, I'll let go.
Glenn, come back.
Thank you.
Hey, Greg. Just one question. So I just want to verify the contingency plan went into effect in 2011. And we haven't really gone to a stage three since then?
We have not.
Okay, so this is our first time. We've been in stage two for how long now?
A year.
And prior to that?
Stage.
No.
I'm sorry, that's 2 years.
Two years in stage two?
2 years is a stage two, and a year prior to that is stage one.
Okay. So we're kind of going into uncharted territory, and we haven't really implemented this plan. So and schools, you had mentioned schools are required to follow these same reduction.
That would be correct, yes.
Okay. And so the plan says a reduction of 10%, and I echo the concerns that I've heard up here at the diocese on the 10%. And I think one of my concerns is just using a year's worth of data. Going back to a year, it seems, and I think Councilmember Bright had mentioned it, that if we've been into a drought for 3 years now, is that about right? And people have started conserving 1 or 2 or possibly even 3 years ago, is that really an accurate reflection? So that's just one thing I just kind of want to throw out into the air, and I have heard it out, and I just want to re-echo it, that is one of my concerns as well, that may not be a good baseline. I've got some great ideas, but I always do. I can tell you myself, this evening before I came here, in the mail came my water bill, and my back lawn is dead. I haven't watered it. But I'm also down 4 units from this time last year. So
an oddity. Why not just have it not be a stage? But there's a 5-year update cycle on the urban water management plan and there vis-a-vis the water shortage contingency plan. And I think at the next 5-year update, it's a great chance to sort of patch some of those things up.
Okay. Good. Gotcha.
And then my second question, the more legitimate question, is the difference between indoor use and outdoor use. Is there any way, I'm not sure if there's any way for the city to actually track that or whatnot. It kind of goes to Councilmember Marshall's comment about his back lawn obviously being outdoor use, not being being maintained. And so is there a way for the city to ever get to that? I know the state, I believe, is saying that their goal is 55 gallons per day per person for indoor use only. So it's kind of the human right to water. So how do we differentiate, or is there a way, or is it just a matter of people moving forward with reducing their outdoor usage and then therefore making the 10%?
I think, you know, beyond toilet retrofits, which are actually substantial in terms of reducing indoor water use, clearly the outdoor water use is going to be the easiest way to meet a 10% reduction goal. There's a standardized methodology for determining what a person's indoor water use would be. You would look over a period of years and find the lowest usage. However, Councilmember Marshall's pointed out some of the holes in that standardized methodology, and that is that, say, 2 years ago, the person let their lawn die. The data is hard to validate without knowing the specific circumstances. However, on an aggregate way of looking at it, I have done calculations for the entire city and looked at total water usage over about a five-year period and looked at periods of lowest water usage during heavy rainstorms, things or months of heavy rain that we had in the past and which we had now. And you look at those months during heavy rains and you look at the water usage, and you can estimate that that's approximately the indoor water usage for the city as a whole. What's interesting, I ran that calculation, and the city came up around just over 30 gallons per capita per day indoor water use.
Wow.
So it really does point to some of the significant challenges we're going to have in not only meeting our short-term water conservation goal, but also meeting the state's long-term 20 by 20 water conservation. 20 by 2020 water conservation goal. So,
Councilmember Bright, did you have any others?
I think I'm good. Thank you very much.
Okay. I had a few questions. We do have a gray water code, don't we, that we do allow people to use gray water?
You could legally, via the building code, plumb your house for gray water reuse. It's a bit challenging, but it can be done. There's a lot simpler methods, putting a bucket in the shower or in the bathtub while you're warming up the water, that kind of thing qualifies. And obviously it's a way of watering plants and things outside using that water. But a true gray water system, you're looking at some costs and you would have to meet the building code requirements.
Thank you. And I'm wondering if instead of doing a special mailing at $5,000+, dollars, is it possible to send a mailing out with our usual billing?
We looked at the timing. There's a real urgency to reducing water consumption, especially the groundwater, and looking at having to go through several billing cycles to get that information out to everyone, and then several billing cycles after that to actually implement the program. I think it pushes it too far into the upcoming water year. We would like to try to get this information out as quickly as possible and get it implemented within a couple of billing cycles.
Okay, thank you. And meantime, people can start right now. It's better if we don't wait.
That's correct.
Okay. And will we be providing any warnings to folks prior to penalties?
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking at I wrote it down here. Let me see if I can find it. And this is the contingency plan itself. And I was just going through the typical, the standard process here for ultimately resulting in a penalty. So, step one, the director, myself, would notify an account that they don't meet the goal. Step two is be notified again, and in this case, would either be visited directly with some information and a warning. You know, here's cost $3.30 per unit. That's your lowest tier. So if you're a fairly low water, you know, what we call a tier one water user, 12 units or less, and you failed to comply with the 10% reduction, your rate would go to $6.60, $100% increase, $6.60 per unit. Failure to comply again would be 200%, or $9.90 per unit for the first 12 units, and then further failure to comply would result in a 300% increase, or $13.20 per unit for the first 12 units. For significant water users up in the over 42-unit range, you know, it ramps up pretty quickly. You go from $4.51 per unit up when you get up in that range all the way up to $18 a unit. I looked at a typical water bill where they used 42 units. The water consumption charge only, there's a lot of other charges related to water use, but the consumption charge only in this particular bill was $155. That part of the bill would have ramped up to $620 by the third violation. So it's very serious.
So may I ask a question then for
sure.
Clarification?
Yeah.
Okay, so I use like 8 units of water. So, and I think just my water portion of the bill is like $29 or something. So we're only talking about that portion of the bill.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. Not all the other parts that make my water bill be $105.
Right, just the tiered rate.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
That's helpful. Thanks. And I just have a few questions, too. You know, I think about people who maybe have just had a new baby, and so they have another family member
right.
there. And so they would have to reduce by significantly more than 10% to get to 10% below where they were. Presumably, those are the kinds of things you would take into account before you would implement a penalty.
Definitely. I mean, I think I think we'd have to look at, you know, household total
Can
water
you
use.
Speak a little closer.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Try that again. I think I'd have to look at a household's total water use, and you know, if a household clearly wasn't conserving, and had a new family member, which you know, great congratulations to them, of course, but clearly hadn't conserved up to that point, and then made the argument that there's no way we could have a 10% reduction. I think in my determination of what is reasonable, I don't think that would fall into that category. However, if they were like Councilman Bright, for example, fairly a tier one water user and had a history of very conservative water use and found themselves in a situation where
I had a baby.
Or a new family member, some form or other. You know, that I would have to consider that and see if it was a reasonable reason for considering less penalty or less goal.
And then my next question is about the water bill. I've been extremely frugal, and I know many people in town are for many years, and so my use is 1 to 2 units in my office and 1 to 2 units in my house. So I don't have any way of looking at my bill and knowing what's 10% of 1 to 2 units, because we only measure from the actual numbers, the meter readings go from 1 month to the next, or 1 2-month period to the next 2-month period. So that makes me a little nervous, because I have no idea if I'm actually meeting that reduction target or not.
Well, first off, I'm sure you will.
I am too.
I'm not concerned about that. And if you think about it, for example, if you used 2 units of water, 10% would be 0.2 unit, 2/10 of a unit. And the water bill is rounded. So your 2-unit water bill, if you reduced it to 1.8, would read 2 units. And therefore, low water users such as yourself would clearly are already conserving water to such an extent that you're not going to provide much benefit
true.
To the system in terms of overall water conservation.
Mm-hmm.
If you ramped up to 10 units and were required to conserve 1/10 or, you know, 1 unit, then I would look to see that you would have 9 units compared, or 1 unit less than your 10 units you used in a previous year.
Okay. So if you're good at it already, your assumption is that you'll probably continue to be good at it and get a little better. All righty, thank you. And the final thing is not something necessarily a question, but something I'd like us to think on just a little bit while we hear from the public, and that is that the San Luis Obispo County just released their state-mandated integrated regional water management plan, and it's 2,000 pages, plus or minus, and that allows us...
Someone bought a house. A year ago, there was a family of 6 living there, and or vice versa. A year ago, there was 1 person living there, and now a family of 6 lives there. 10% reduction from a year ago would not be reasonable. Examples that you've used, when there's already a low consumption of water, even though it may not even show as a measurement, those are not going to be subject to some heavy enforcement as long as that remains to be a baseline. So the plan contemplates those types of situations, and I know there's a lot of concern among you as well as the residents. You know, what happens if? And there will be individual situations. That's why we are asking for an additional part-time staff member to assist the Public Works Director in working the system and being able to monitor and make decisions on these types of issues. So those things have been considered. They have been discussed. We've gone through various scenarios with the city manager and the Public Works Director. With regard to the measuring period, going back a year, it appeared to be the most workable solution that was all in all reasonable. It would be great to have a 5-year average and be able to go back, but because of the billing system and some of the constraints related to that, this was what we suggest to be used. You do have the ability to affect that. If you think that that's not a reasonable measuring stick, you may direct staff to do something different. But a lot of thought and work went into making the decision to recommend to you as how we're going to measure the 10% decrease. But that is open to your consideration and change if you should you desire to do that. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Does the council have any questions on that?
I have one question, and actually may be more appropriate for the city manager, but it dovetails with what you were just saying. As part of the budget discussions, we had an update to our accounting system. So as part of the discussions, if that was in place, would that help with the tallying of information, the tallying of data?
Most likely, yes. Most likely. Unfortunately, due to the timing of the drought,
right.
We don't have that available to us, nor will we anytime in the near future.
Okay. It's just a thoughtful question, comment.
Helpful. And I had just one other question. The staff report referred to reporting to the council at regular intervals. I'd like to nail that down a little tighter. What is your thought of a regular interval?
Well, first of all, we know we'll have to go through at least 2 billing cycles to capture all the customers. And that's just for notification. So you're looking at 2 months. Again, another month after that, so we have a bill to consider and compare, and then a notification period. So we won't know a lot about how well we're doing and how it's being implemented and how effectively or difficult it is to implement it. I'd say for maybe as much as 6 months. And after that point, I think the city manager suggested.
I would like to suggest that once we pass that first interval, we would be able. It won't be as difficult to compile the information. It would be on a quarterly basis.
That's great. Thank you. Any other questions of the council before we go out to the public?
One more comment, if I may, addressing Councilmember Nichols' question with regard to Prop 218. In some jurisdictions, what is being done is what's called the drought surcharge. And it is a Prop 218 hearing. It's an additional charge to the water bill, which reflects the costs of the drought, whether that is the expense of drawing the water from a lower aquifer, whether it's electrical bills, whether it's code enforcement officers. So if and when that situation arises, and if we see that there is a cost to the system that can't be recovered either through the work of staff or through the penalties, then that would be a consideration, as opposed to a regular rate change, which would remain a surcharge, is something that can be installed for the duration of the drought and then removed once the drought is completed and the expenses have been recovered. So there are some options with regard to the 218 process.
Thank you. So I'm going to open this to the public, and our first speaker is Kay Rosen, who came forward earlier.
Hello again. I live in the Golden, a lot of them. They can't carry buckets from the shower to water their plants, and they don't have that many plants anyway. And they're on fixed incomes. You know, to make them do a 10% would be, you know, a horrible for them for their income. And I would I would actually like to suggest, and you can come and walk our neighborhood and you'll see what I'm talking about, that we already are conserving just because we have rocks and pavers. And I'd like to see that our neighborhood is excluded from this 10% reduction. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? And if you can give us your name and city of residence.
I'm Cynthia Lynn. I'm concerned about my husband was a fireman here for 38 years, and I'm concerned about what consideration is going to be given to the people who have swimming pools. I know the big basin is empty. It's been empty for years. We don't have many places to conserve water in case of fire. We haven't had any big fires here for many years. The one on Grand Avenue where the gentleman was lost, we haven't had any big fires here. Now, swimming pools are taxed highly. Swimming pools cost a lot of money to keep up and keep that water in the pool. If we take the water out of the pool, the earth is always moving, and it will ruin that swimming pool, which costs about $70,000 to put it in. So there are several swimming pools in town. I have one. I know all about swimming pools. And I'm keeping the water in there. There is a pump down on Santa Margarita Street, and it's a way to pump. Oh, there was a house fire right next to me about 10 years ago. I came home and the fire was burning the house. And there is a pump down on Santa Margarita Street. I think that's where it is. You'll find it if there are any here. And they can pump the water up to Angelo Terrace and houses in that area. So I don't know how many more pumps they have around town. But there's water at the Heights, the Grover Heights School, the big tank that Pismo owns half of. And there's water what's by the across the street from here. There's something there. There's a pump, there's either a tank or a pump, a well. I think there's a well there. So we've got to consider swimming pools and maybe give a little consideration for them to keep the water in there. That's all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Come on up.
Mayor, Council, good evening. My name is Doug Tunhill, 1125 Margarita. A word I haven't heard tonight, and a word I did hear a minute ago, was really great. The first word is equity. I haven't heard that tonight, and I think there's a mistake there. The second word was aggregate, which came up from over here. My suggestion is that those two be combined somehow, and that the aggregate water usage in the city be established at a 10% reduction. It'll take more work. It'll take a lot more numbers. But you know, that kind of thing may lead to a far more equitable solution than what's happening right now. I could go through all the biography here. I'm not going to do that. You know what my yard looks like. It's dry. Okay. I don't know what would be involved in making that happen. I hope I'm making myself understood, but I would really recommend that approach. It's essentially what happens when the federal government tells General Motors, for instance, that they have to come up with a fleet average of so many miles per gallon. City can do the same thing. A lot of bright people here who can make that happen if they decide to take that approach. This 10% across the board is inherently inequitable, and I think everybody recognizes that. I've heard the question come up repeatedly.
Anything hardly outside, it's really going to be rough, and I think that there should be a better way to make it more equitable.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, just super quickly. The same energy.
Can you give us your name, please?
Hey, Steve, and I live in North Grover as well. You know, I got nailed for not bringing my trash can up within a timely fashion. If you read the code, they're supposed to be behind the fence. So many folks have their trash cans out all week. So whoever came by to nab me for not putting my trash can away, you could drive by and see people watering their lawns all day long. It almost comes off as elitist, some of the things I've heard tonight. I feel that the good people are being punished. I mean, where else would we cut it?
Thank you.
Thank you for the illusion of democracy. Appreciate your time.
Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to bring it back to the council and see if we can address some of those things. I think there have been a lot of very good suggestions that could come forward when we get to the stage of reviewing what we've got. But right now we have a water emergency, and it's not even a question of equity. It's a question of water. So I'm wondering if staff can explain to us again when this ordinance will come back for review, and we can keep some of those comments and address them at that time.
Certainly, the ordinance can come back should the council direct, and probably should be reviewed on a ongoing basis. We did that 2 years ago, 2011, if I'm not mistaken. So at your direction, it can come back, but it will take time to put into place, and that's the other issue that we're dealing with. You
yes.
probably are looking at, you know, probably 4 to 6 months at a minimum, and then it ends up having to be reviewed at the state level in this case.
And with regard to the contingency plan or the actual stage three,
can you speak into the mic?
Certainly. I apologize, Mayor. When the drought is over, when the measurements come back to the levels that are dictated by the water contingency plan, we will be back to you to remove to ask you to lower the stages, remove the urgency or the stage three, and potentially move to stage two or whichever direction the water levels dictate.
Okay.
One of the things that I think was addressed by some of the speakers. The direction and the goal of this ordinance and the water contingency plan, which is mandated by the state, is to reduce the consumption of water in the city by 10%. It is a citywide measurement. It is not that every individual, nobody will knock on every single door in the city within the next 3 months trying to see how much water people are using. But it is a plan that has been put into effect. There will be enforcement. Obviously, as explained by the city engineer, there are several notifications, several stages of, you know, what can we do to help? What, you know, what else can be done? And obviously instances, as we already talked about, where it is not reasonable. The conservation is at a level that it can't be decreased. The discretion will be exercised accordingly. But it is a citywide measurement. We need to reduce our consumption of our water by 10%. That's what the plan dictates.
And one of the things that you'd mentioned earlier, but perhaps it wasn't easy to hear, was that if we do need to raise rates, and at this stage we haven't determined that because we haven't started yet, but if we did need to, it is possible to put in a drought rate, which could then be pared back when the drought is over. Is that right?
That is exactly correct. Mm-hmm. That's one of the options that the council will have if and when the need arises for an adjustment to cover the costs of the drought. It can be a rate that's a surcharge, basically, for the duration of the drought, which would then, by its own terms, be removed once the drought is over and the costs of the drought have been recovered through the rates.
Okay, so what we're saying right now is there is a water shortage now. We need to take this decision now. We have ordinances in place that we can't immediately amend, but we can learn from what we've got now and use those over the course of the next months or year and make whatever changes we need to make it a better ordinance, if it needs to be. Okay, thank you. Any comments from council?
Actually, one comment. It's kind of piggybacking on what you just said. It's the situation is currently in where we need to make a decision, and the best way of kind of measuring stick is through the use of what goes through the water meters, and that's how the ordinance has been in place, and so that's why.
I think it's a good yardstick, as you put it, to when we do come back to council on one of these regular updates to say, this is working or doesn't appear to be working. Because, you know, again, we're not here because things are looking really good with your water supply. Things aren't looking that good with the water supply. I mean, this is potentially serious. I mean, stage three, as you can see, is not going to be easy to implement, and it is going to impact people. We need to know that it's working, and if it's not working, we really do need to come back and consider some of these other alternatives which are suggested in the water shortage contingency plan, because we really need the reduction.
Thank you. Any other comments from...
Yes. If I might. I just would kind of like to talk a little bit about the concern about it being fairly... That this plan be fairly implemented. And as I understand it, what I've heard is that folks that are already low water users, and you continue to be a low water user, then your water use is not going to go up, and therefore you shouldn't really have a concern. Is that correct? Am I understanding this correctly?
Let's take some of the examples we've heard tonight.
Can you talk louder, Greg?
Let me try that again. Let me take some of the examples you've heard tonight. If, for example, you're using 8 units of water, you know, a 10% reduction would be 8/10 of a unit. You know, it's a tiny amount of water at that point. It still may be very difficult. But we could, at that point, if you're finding it impossible, you know, we're here to help. The public works staff, staff in general, is here to help. We're trying to get enough information out there. And so, first, you know, it comes to my discretion to consider, well, what do you have in place? I mean, if for example, somebody had to visit and see that, hey, I don't have a yard, and I have a water-conserving toilet, and I have a water-conserving washing machine, and I have low-flow shower heads, and we could look and establish that everything's in place that should be working, and we can see a historical trend toward water conservation, then that's where the discretion part comes in. It has to be reasonable, it has to make sense, and we don't want to punish people that are already conserving. On the flip side, if we see a family that's using 65, 70 units of water, there's a lot that can be done
right.
at that amount of water use to reduce 10%.
Exactly. So, and that's my point. So for like the for the Youngs and the Sills and other folks and the folks that are in Golden West, those folks who have, let's say they've pretty much done the conservation measures that they can possibly do, then they shouldn't really be so concerned. If you're conserving as much as you think you really can, and you agree, and you will help if there's something else you think they might be able to do. But if you're really conserving all that you can and you've worked, like I think I've pretty much done what I can do, then I don't think there should be a real concern about, because I do believe that this will be implemented fairly. So that's my concern. I just want people to I don't want them to think that we're going to come down with a hammer and,
it's,
you know, make you, well, you know, so you can't take a shower or that sort of thing. Yes?
To be clear, if the council takes action on this item, the 10% reduction is mandatory for all water users in the city. The discretion is vested in the Public Works Director to make determinations in certain instances when circumstances dictate that a fine would not be appropriate.
Okay. That's all I'm asking.
That's what we can do.
Okay. And so that's the point I'm trying to make. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Mr.
Thank
Marshall.
You. Just some parting comments. So, I mean, it's evident to me from listening to staff tonight that they've really agonized over this for a while, and they're not bringing anything to us that's not been fully vented between them. So I'm okay with the direction that we're going. The nice thing is that staff does have the discretion. I know our Public Works Director is going to do everything he can to guide people before we even implement policy, and our Public Works Director and staff in general. And if people are not feeling that they've been treated right, or that not so much they've not been treated right, that they have a reason for not being able to achieve the 10% reduction, there is always the appealable period. We've heard that this evening. And this is the first time we've implemented this contingency plan. So as you had mentioned, Mayor, we need to work through some rough spots and see how it works. And
we'll see how we can do. And I would be happy to have a motion.
With that, I'll move for staff's recommendation. Now, do we need another recommendation for the temporary employee? I don't
know.
No? Okay.
Did you say you're making the motion?
I move for staff's recommendation.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Marshall, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. This is probably a roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. So that is unanimous. And we are moving now to our proposed city charter ballot measure, and City Manager Peralta is going to present this one.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, as you indicated, this is actually a public hearing. It's the second public hearing as a part of a process to consider a city charter, placement of a city charter a matter before the voters. By way of background, again, in California, it is important to recall that we essentially have two forms of government. One is a general law, municipal government, that is. One is a general law city, and the other is a charter city. A general law city derives its powers from the general laws adopted by the state legislature and from the police powers granted in the state's constitution. Essentially, the collection of state laws becomes the city's constitution and pretty much guides what the city is able to do. Charter cities are different. They derive their powers from the state's constitution as well, but they're subject to enactments of the state legislature on matters of statewide concern. Charter cities then tend to maintain greater authority than general law cities over matters which are considered local affairs. And I've listed a few of those in the staff report. Municipal elections, land use, purchasing and construction, and contracting procedures for local projects, goods and services, city finances, and city government structure. The council has chosen to draft the charter measure, and ultimately we're going through a public hearing process to determine whether or not the council chooses to place that matter on the ballot, whether it's November 14th or some later date. I do want to indicate that primarily from staff's perspective, the intent of the draft thus far is to primarily ensure that the city has greater control under those matters that directly affect them, and that there is some separation between ourselves and the state. This was detailed in the staff report that I provided to you last time and actually attached here, but just to review again some of the key provisions of this charter that is currently before you. Section 200, which is the form of government, the local government structure remains essentially the same, the city manager, council form of government. Section 201, elected officials, remains the same with the four directly elected council members for 4 years and the mayor being elected for a two-year term. Nothing changes there. There is a residency requirement that would be implemented, requiring individuals to reside within the city 6 months prior to filing for election. Council member compensation stays the same as it is today and as provided in state law. Charter does not change that. The economic and community development, the city, this is a policy statement that would be included in the charter that indicates that the city will promote economic and community development and then preserve and encourage the beach town character of Grover Beach. This is to be a guiding principle of the charter. Purchasing and public works contracts, this would allow the city to establish local rules governing public works contracts and purchasing of goods and services. This would probably provide us the ability to have greater flexibility over local expenditures with the development of our own rules. The Think Local First option, this section is a policy statement to encourage the adoption of legislation and programs that will support local businesses and promote the property tax that is being funneled to the state. And then Section 401, Mandates Limited. This is very important because it allows the council essentially to say no to programs that are state mandates but don't carry with them the ability to fund those mandates. During the last public hearing, the council discussed extensively language relative to prevailing wage. The direction from the council was to basically leave Section 301 as it is, that gives the city broad powers relative to, again, public works contracts, performance standards, et cetera, relative to public projects, and this would include the compensation of employees. The other section that the council asked be left in the draft was former Section 302, but have that language struck out, and that language would provide for the endorsement of the prevailing wage in the draft charter. This is, as I've mentioned, the second public hearing as a part of the state-required process to move this along. The council does have the ability, and I want to make sure that this is clearly understood, that the council has the ability to terminate this process at any given point in time. Keep in mind that we have yet to We have the potential of listing another ballot measure on in November, which would be a general obligation bond issue for the repair of the streets, something that you need to keep in mind as to whether you think there's a need to move this along at the present time. Staff is available to answer any questions that you might have. The recommendation is that the council make any additional changes to the draft charter, and then if the council desires, schedule the final hearing for this, which would be on the 7th of July. The council still has the ability to make changes up until that particular time relative to the drafting of the ballot measure. I'm available, and as is the city attorney, in the event you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Two questions. One for the city manager is, I know if we did move forward with the process, July 7th would be the next scheduled public hearing. What would be the latest we could make a final decision?
It'll be, I must tell you that the city clerk would prefer that this be done sooner than later, and mm-hmm. And the reason is that in addition to authorizing the placement of the measure on the ballot, we'll also have to deal with things like the development of a supporting argument. So I would suggest that you probably wouldn't want to put that off any later than the second meeting in July at the very latest.
Okay.
The 20th.
Okay.
So that would be the 20th.
Is it 21st?
21st.
Okay. And then the second question I had is I had a brief conversation with the city attorney last week with regards to a potential option. And I was wondering if, once I say that, if you would give any results of research that you might have done. And the question surrounded, again, around prevailing wage. As I've kind of said in the past, the charter has lots of good elements, I believe, to it that would make us a very good candidate for a charter city, along with all the benefits that comes with that. Obviously, prevailing wage seems to be the largest touchstone item that surrounds that. Is there a mechanism or is there an opportunity to effectively make that a charter measure, vote yes or no, prevailing wage, vote yes or no? So basically, if you vote yes on this, would you prefer prevailing wage or non-prevailing wage?
In short, I did not find any way of accomplishing that. The main reason being that the voters are entitled to see the measure as one document, and that is what the voters will be voting on should you choose to move that forward. So the city charter, as written and as approved by you, will have to be a singular document. Unlike the example of the last election where we had an election for a separately elected mayor, those two questions could be framed in two different ballots. Would you like to have a separately elected mayor, yes or no? Would you like the term for that mayor to be 2 or 4 years? It is not a one or the other, up to the city council. And then either by ordinance or resolution, generally by resolution, the council can set those matters in place if the charter is successful.
So,
and that would provide you with the ability to be responsive to whatever faith happens with SB7, if state law is that should you choose to not follow prevailing wage, you will not be receiving any grant money or from state or federal sources, then the council has a decision to make. If SB7 happens to be overturned through litigation and it's not a valid law and the charter cities remain able to choose whether or not they pay prevailing wage without any financial penalties from the state or the federal government, the council can act accordingly in the resolution. So that section as designed gives you the most flexibility with regard to these issues.
And future flexibility for that matter.
That is, exactly.
Which is much easier to change if
right.
The ebb and flow of the tide wishes it to change.
Any changes that you would make to the actual language of the charter, so mm-hmm. should you put any of these things in basically in the charter a change to that would require you to go through this process one more time and put it before the voters, and it would only be effective if the voters voted for it.
Whereas the way we're proposing it is it would just be a council action at a public hearing.
At a public hearing, right, and subject to public input.
Public input at the time. Right. Now, when you said resolution versus ordinance, if we set an ordinance, it would be in our code. If we did a resolution, it would be a case-by-case, project-per-project?
No, resolution is... It's a process. In other words, a resolution can be changed by a resolution. Ordinance can only be changed by another ordinance. So whichever way you would prefer to proceed, that would be available to you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Interesting. Okay. Council Member Nichols, did you have any questions?
Nope, not at this time.
All right. I had a couple of questions. So I just wanted to clarify, if we were to continue and have a further meeting on the 7th or the 16th, are you saying that we could still at that date make any amendments?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. And also a question for the city attorney. I had an email correspondence with a member of the public who had concerns that we could certainly say in the Think Local First option that we're going to support local business, but if there's a new council, they may change their minds. And my thought about a charter is that it is, as I think the city manager so aptly said, it's guiding principles. So if we're talking about guiding principles, and those are principles that we have, as a council, have embraced for many years now, wherever legal, we've always hired locally, is that something that instead of saying we may, can we say shall?
In which part?
That would be in section 303, the Think Local First option.
Right.
To the extent permitted by state and federal law, the city shall establish by ordinance or resolution specified and limited bid advantages for firms within a specified distance of the city. The city shall enact such an ordinance in recognition of the fact that local firms and local employees help support the rules or regulations to regulate all other aspects of public contracting, instead of may.
Are you able to do that?
Yeah.
You are.
Are there any reasons we shouldn't? Are there issues?
Legally speaking, it would be binding future councils and future situations to a place where they may not be able to go. Now, the saving grace in this sentence is to the extent permitted by state and federal law, so there's always a escape clause, for lack of a better word. But using shall is mandatory, obviously. Using may is vests certain discretion. So to the extent that this is to be a guiding principle, if you're asking for my opinion, I think may is probably more appropriate. If it is a mandate versus a guiding principle, then a shall would be the word that you could choose to use.
Thank you. Okay. And those were the only questions I had. So I'm going to open this to the public, and if you can come forward and give us your name and city of residence, and we'll allow 3 minutes per speaker.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Tucker. I reside in Sonora, California, and I'm a representative from the Construction Industry Forza Council, or CVAC. My organization is devoted to public contract code compliance and education. The public contract code outlines the bid procedures the city follows when they're contracting out work. That's completely separate from the labor code, which outlines the prevailing wage requirements. So I want to make sure that that's understood. If you're exempting the public contract code, that has nothing to do with prevailing wage. I wanted to mention that I've attended prior charter committee meetings. I've sent you letters regarding the importance of California. No complaints of unsatisfactory work by contractors that I've ever heard of. And so I just ask that you do not exempt that code if you continue to pursue the charter. So I appreciate your consideration. If you have any questions, I'm available.
Thank you for coming forward. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward?
My name is Cherie Cabral. I reside in Danville, California, in Northern California, but I am here on behalf of the California State Building and Construction Trades Labor Management Cooperative Committee, which is collaboration between the labor side and the contractor side on a statewide basis. I've had the opportunity to see and speak to many of you. I've attended the hearings that have been held through the committee, and also that was done by the city manager, the city attorney, and a couple of individuals here. Kind of some last thoughts on the matter. I have two issues, I suppose. The first one was brought up by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, which is you guys are trying to take a whack at prevailing wage all within the one document, and this has been a very contentious process. So I would ask why the council has not yet considered whether or not it would be more appropriate to allow your citizens to make the determination as to whether or not they felt prevailing wage was appropriate to be paid or not. And in doing so, you have the ability of writing the language into your charter, passing your charter, because at that point, the labor community, the working people in this community will support that. At the point that it is not in the charter, that the fact that you are supporting prevailing wage is not in the charter, you're going to have a very hard time getting the working people in this community supporting that. So why would you not write it into your charter? And then if you think it's appropriate and you think you have the proof necessary to show this community that you can save this abundance of money, why would you not take it back as a charter amendment and allow the community to make that decision instead of leaving it on your shoulders and potentially opening the city up to the liability in the future of whether or not this council or a future council or the councils beyond that have a perceivable axe to grind or otherwise. You take some of the burden off of your shoulders for where the impetus for doing so is coming from. My second question would be, this is not going to be a cheap process. You've been there once. You've done it. It's been failed. You just heard from your city engineer that you're going to spend a lot of money going through having to deal with a water shortage, paying an extra staff person, the unknown on the money that you're going to lose on your water bills, what your revenue issues are going to be, how that's going to impact it. I guess I would ask that since you've spent an hour and 15, 20 minutes discussing that, right now if you had to make a choice to put before your voters, which issue is going to be more important to the people that live here, conserving water and the fees that are going to be associated with that, the monetary losses, the revenue issues, or really pushing through the charter? Maybe now is not necessarily the most appropriate time. Maybe it's something that should be deferred to the future. So with that, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members. I'm David Baldwin, a resident of Aurora Grande. I'm a rep for the Cement Masons Union. I've been here many times, spoke with most of you. Nice to see you again. I just want to reiterate again that the importance of keeping some strong language for prevailing wage in the charter. I've been here a lot of times, and I do believe that you guys, all of you, want to do the right thing and what you believe is the best thing for Grover Beach and the people in Grover Beach. There's a lot of catchy phrases that get thrown around about, the best thing for Grover is for local control and for the biggest bang for our buck and our own rules on flexibility. But the truth is that these charters are tricky things, and they're, by their nature, a lot of loopholes that are sometimes hard to navigate. I guess I just want to say, why not draft a charter that works for everybody at Grover rather than single out the skilled crafts and damage their ability to make a living and to stay here in the city and support their families. So I hope you'll keep that in mind, and I just urge for the strongest prevailing wage language you can have in the charter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Terry Madonna, Santa Margarita. I'm the business agent of Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Local 403. And I thank everybody that just come up before me and spoke, crossed a bunch of stuff off my list. I'm just going to add a little bit. I'm not sure what the advantage, I mean, I think your black lady here said, I think you are, I mean, this, if you want to limit, try to eliminate prevailing wage and take it to a vote, do it at another time. That's all I have.
Thank you for coming down again. Anybody else who'd like to comment?
Rob Ehlers, 241 North 13th Street, Grover Beach. I sat on a charter review committee with a few of the people in the room here. My main concern is that we're still talking about the same issues. Two of you brought up prevailing wage in the general discussion amongst y'all. One of you did no comment. I'm pretty sure we know where he stands. We're asking for strong language in prevailing wage. I'm an apprentice for Local 155 Ironworkers. I live here in town. The Ironworkers brought me to this town when I moved down from Washington, and I have not left since. Super important to keep prevailing wage. It's expensive to live on the coast, and basically what you're asking us to vote on, you know, with the route that I see the city council wanting to go with prevailing wage, is you're asking for us to give up our pay that helps us stay here, you know, and it's just not right, and you're going to be forced into losing another battle that you already lost. You know, I've heard the excuses of, well, we didn't get our message out soon enough. Well, November's just around the corner. July's your next meeting. You're going to be faced with the same amount of time and opportunity to get your message out, except for the fact that we already know the issue at hand, and it's already been out there. And I'm all for independence from the state, but not at the expense of the people that live in this community. So I would just encourage to have strong language in there for prevailing wage to not only be in there now, but in the future. You know, it's tough for me to hear the same talk. Like, I sat through meetings and meetings and meetings of this prevailing wage talk, and it just seems like this is more of a prevailing wage issue versus a independence from the state on other issues. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many hours that, you know, Bob and Bill and I and some other gentlemen in the room sat here talking just about prevailing wage. You know, and so I'm actually going to support the charter if you support prevailing wage, but I'm uneasy doing it because of the fact of how much talk has been over prevailing wage. You know, I mean, I would like to see you guys convince me that you're going forward with a charter for the right reasons and not just a prevailing wage and not just putting it off and being able to go back on what we decided on to begin with, you know.
Your time's up.
Okay.
Thanks. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Ocean View Avenue in Grover Beach. I was part of the same committee with Rob and John and Bob, and I got to tell you, it does sound like Groundhog Day a little bit. Maybe it's because I still have a PTSD from the committee. But I think when we came before you and shared the report that we all had our fingerprints on, I don't know how much more clear to make it that the trade organization said they would support a charter, included an endorsement of prevailing wage, and they would oppose it without it. So I think the writing's clearly on the wall. With that being said, now that I've reinforced that again, is SB 7. People tell me it's going to be challenged, and that challenge is going to take time. And the city has many other priorities. We heard about a big one tonight. I already sent a text message to my family about showering.
Thank you.
You know, if a bond measure for the streets is going to go forward, I think you need to take the appropriate time. I think we have a great community that gets behind the right issues, but we need to get out there and educate them. And I'm always willing to raise my hand to help. But I was in those rooms, and I heard from the trade representatives, and I heard from, you know, John and Rob are great guys with opposing views. Bill was there as well. Everyone cares about the community, but it's very clear to me how it's going to go. Those hit pieces that we all despise, they're easily digested by the community. They're easy to get behind. They're easy to create distrust in our community, and none of us want them.
I would get it, but it should be up to the city as to what we are able to do with this. A charter city is very important. The charter was lost by, I believe, 4 points or 4 votes. And after speaking to about 30 people who asked me what the charter was about, they had no clue. So you do need to educate people if you are going to, because the unions are going to educate them on their views, which is great. And like I said, my whole family's been union. I'm very pro-union. However, we need to be a charter city. We need to take control of our city, and we need to educate these people. And you got Ramona Gardens right over there. We've got 4 or 5 citizens in the town that don't have anything really to do with you guys that are more than willing to explain to people what the charter city can or cannot do for the people. And the unions can come and talk. We can come and talk and see where it goes. But I really hope that you go forward with it, because I don't think it's a point of water or a charter city. I think we need to look at both of them at the same time, if that's what it takes. I think that we need to move forward on this issue as well as the water issue. I think the water issue is going to not be that hard a thing for people to do, 10%, other than those that are very conservative. I'm conservative. I have 5 people on my property in different units. They're not. They will be very shortly, which I'll be very happy over. But, you know, I want you to really think about how you word this and stuff, because you need to make it where you guys, the city, our town makes the decision of what happens, and so that we can actually get some stuff done. We don't have very much money. We all know that. And Grover Beach United's trying desperately to make a few dollars to put, you know, some sod into these potholes or something and stuff. But that's not going to do it. We need to be able to go out, get bonds, get workers that are professional, that know what they're doing, and get the job done. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward?
Roseville, California. This evening, however, I am speaking on behalf of the California Field Iron Workers, the Labor and Management Cooperative Trust. I've been here many times before. I was at a lot of the Charter Council meetings. I'll be very brief. Everybody this evening has already pretty much stated what I wanted to say. I crossed them off my list as well while I was sitting down. Madam Mayor, I noticed that you're very, very meticulous with the language that you use in the Charter. You're very precise in the way that things are worded. I would ask that that carry over to the prevailing wage, and that you use very strong pro-prevailing wage language in your charter, which in turn, Mayor Pro Tem, would give you that opportunity to have 2 separate votes. If you're very clear in using pro-prevailing wage in your charter, and that passes, as Ms. Cabral said, you can then come back around later and you can check it again and see what the community thinks about removing that language. That way you're able to move forward with the charter that all those people are so tirelessly for. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else who'd like to come forward? Okay, seeing no more, we'll bring it back to the council. And we can have some conversation. I did want to clarify one of the comments made. I hope I misunderstood it, but it seemed like there was an implication that we will be taking out all public contract code, and I just wanted to make sure that this is correct, that we're not throwing away any of our ordinances, any of our codes, any of our current practices by taking on the charter. Is that correct? All of our existing ordinances remain in place?
Yes, until
and unless changed by the council.
Okay, so we're not throwing it all away and starting over. We're making a few changes.
That's correct. Again, the language is sufficiently broad. It's not to say that you need to throw out the public contracting code. It does say that the city should have the right to ensure that what is done is in the best interest of the city. The one comment I would have is that, you know, it doesn't, one shoe does not fit all situations. This gives you the flexibility to establish rules that are in the best interest of the city. And before you do that, I'm sure you will think long and hard about all of the issues that have been brought up tonight and to ensure the process stays equitable and fair.
Thank you. And there was a comment that charter cities are kind of tricky, and I wonder if you could remind us of who the charter cities are locally.
Charter cities locally are the city of Santa Maria, the city of Solvang.
I know there's been a lot of effort and a lot of consternation, a lot of thought and so forth that's gone into this. I do agree with some of the speakers tonight that we do have other issues that are about to run over the top of us, i.e. streets, potentially long-term with water and the droughts and so forth. And I'm concerned about the if we aren't going to make a strong statement with whichever way we decide to go with regards to prevailing wage and either leaving it out completely, putting it in with the strongest language possible, there is going to be a potential for a split vote or an educated vote that that has an opportunity to go whichever way wins the education battle, so to speak. So from that perspective, I'm going to bounce off of something that Councilman Bright said. It was either the last time or the last time we had a public hearing, is streets are kind of our highest priority in the city, with or without prevailing wage because of the SB7 issue. That's yet to be resolved, so we're going to be doing prevailing wage if we move forward with a general obligation bond. Short of having a strong prevailing wage provision in here, I would say we table the charter at this point.
I will concur with that. I would like to see us table it also and move it on to the July meeting, at which time I think we will be in a better position to make a final decision on how we want to proceed with the charter.
So you're saying move ahead to without making a decision to the July 7th meeting?
That is correct.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'm confused. Can you help me, Martin?
I think...
Are we tabling
no.
something?
No worries.
Yeah. Tabling something, technically speaking, under Roberts, which we are not following here.
Okay.
We follow Rosenberg. But tabling an item is a motion to set the item aside and leave it in a placeholder. Right. Technically speaking, in order to return it to an agenda, it has to be a separate motion. It's, okay. It's a little bit of a process. What I heard Mayor Pro Tem say is that he was in favor not moving on to the next meeting, but saying we stop it here. What I heard Councilmember Nichols say is that he's in favor of moving the decision to the next meeting.
I think the word continue is appropriate, is it not?
Continue. Okay. So how would that affect the ballot if we continued it?
Well, you certainly are able, as the city manager outlined, to bring this item back at the July meeting, mm-hmm. Continue to shape the charter, continue to have the discussion, decide to terminate the process at that point in time, or continue to move it forward to the ballot. I think, as again expressed several minutes ago, the time is going to get short if we move to the July meeting without a direction to staff.
Mm-hmm.
We would be able to scramble and bring something back to you at the second meeting to July, but that would be truly pushing it to the outside limit.
On top of everything else that we have going on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. And, Bob, how comfortable do you feel with the public outreach that we've done so far on the charter?
Well, certainly. I think public outreach has been fairly limited in reality. We've had good public discussion here, as it has been required by the state law. And we did do one public workshop meeting at one point. But in terms of real outreach, going out and testing the community in terms of how they feel about a charter per se, we haven't done that. We've been staying pretty much with the process as outlined by state law.
Thank you.
I'd like to amend that, because we did have a charter committee of interested citizens who did quite a lot of work on it. So,
Madam Mayor, that's absolutely correct, and they deserve a lot of the credit for the initiation of this discussion. What I was talking about was going out and doing a broader outreach than any of us have taken on thus far.
Thank you.
That was the intent of my question.
Okay.
To figure out. Wow. I'm split. So we were kind of, Councilmember Nichols, I guess your intent of continuing this is to see what happens with the pavement process?
That is correct.
Okay. But you don't necessarily want to kill the charter at this point. Maybe
absolutely not.
Okay. Whereas
21st. Mm. But the 7th has been on the agenda for quite some time, or on the plan of action for quite some time. We haven't heard from Councilmember Bright yet.
Thank you. My opinion hasn't really changed much from the last time around. I do know that others have done public outreach, and it is certainly not hasn't been for our charter, and I imagine that's going to continue. Mm. And I truly believe that we're going to have a real hard time going forward with our charter unless we get some real definite language in our charter. And so I agree with Mayor Pro Tem Lee at this point in time, but I don't have a problem if we want to go forward to the next meeting, if that's the opinion of the council. I think it might be best for our staff if we stop it here, but I'll go with the majority.
And I guess I have to weigh in here. I'm inclined to say, is it a lot more work if we make no changes tonight but just bring it back on the 7th?
Well, there's a couple of things that you can consider. First of all, you can terminate the process, as I've indicated, at any point in time. All it takes is direction from the council. Let me outline another alternative for you. Next Wednesday, the 25th of this month, we're going to hear both the polling results regarding the general obligation bond issue, as well as the update on the pavement management program in terms of what we need to do with the streets. Certainly, at that meeting, you could direct staff accordingly based on the information you'll have at that point, whether to continue on to the 7th or to terminate the process at that particular point. And you'd have the ability to do that simply by providing the necessary direction to staff.
Interesting.
I like that
compromise.
Idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unanimous compromise.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one is is actually, I believe, a voice vote. Nope. Sorry. Got to look at. Here we go. It is a voice vote. All right. So sounds like we've reached consensus. So we just need a motion and a second and a vote.
I'll move that we continue this item
until the 25th.
Until July.
Actually, what you would do, Madam Mayor, if mm-hmm. I could, is you leave it as it is, mm-hmm. scheduled for July 7th. But keep in mind that during the meeting of the 25th, you still have the opportunity to provide staff. Yeah,
okay.
With the direction.
I'll second it for the point of discussion. Would we need to agendize something for that meeting?
You know, my take on that is that you will have an agenda item. That agenda item will we can simply do that. We'll add that to it.
And for the sake of the folks that come from out of town, would we anticipate public comments or public input at that point as well, or how would that proceed?
You would have public input at any public meeting.
Okay. So this is different than just continuing to date certain?
Okay. Yeah.
It may create some challenges with regard to the noticing. Should the council decide to move forward? I think one of the solutions is to simply leave the public hearing on for the 7th.
Right.
Because
I see. Yeah.
Because we need a greater period of time between the two meetings to schedule a public hearing. It's not a required public hearing, but customarily we've done these things with a public hearing, so we want to continue to do that.
So we're saying we're going to, the motion is that we're going to continue it to the 7th, but we will have the option at the meeting on the 25th of giving direction to either keep it on the agenda on the 7th or remove it altogether.
That's correct.
Okay. So it becomes an agenda. It will be a discussion of the agenda on the 25th.
Right. And we may just combine the two items into a singular item. In other words, that may be one of the recommended actions that staff takes on that item.
Okay. All right. Good. Is that indeed your motion, Council Member Nichols?
Yes, it does.
And your second,
yes, it is.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? All right.
I'm going to start out. I'm just going to give you a brief background on the housing element, and I'm going to turn it over to Amy for more detailed discussion. So as you know, the housing element is one of 7 mandated elements of the city's general plan. It's the only element that is statutorily required to be certified every 5 years by the California Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, as we call them. The current deadline for this housing element update is June 30th, 2014, and the planning period will run from that date through June of 2019, the 5-year period. The city did apply for and receive funding for the housing element update through a community development block grant. That means that there's been no cost to the citizens for the update of this housing element this year. Briefly, as you recall, on April 21st, the council did review the draft housing element, and you directed staff to submit it to HCD, which we did. HCD, again, takes a prominent role in this process. They then review the document and provide comments. As a result of their review, they are recommending certification of the housing element with some recommended revisions that we'll be reviewing tonight. On June 9th, we took it to the Planning Commission for their review. They did recommend that the City Council adopt the draft housing element with the revisions included by HCD. To note, a draft initial study and negative declaration were prepared for the housing element update. No potential environmental impacts were identified as a result of the housing element update, and we did circulate for a 30-day public review comment period, and we received no comments. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Amy and let her get into the details.
Thank you.
Good evening, members of the council, Mayor Peterson. As Bruce mentioned, we are near the conclusion of our update process, and I have a brief overview of what I'm going to talk about. It's going to be a quick presentation, so please ask questions when I'm finished, if you have any. We have some goals for the meeting, and I'll talk about those next. We also want to remind you of the regional housing needs allocation, which is a key part of the analysis that we performed in the update. I will show you some slides of the input we received both at the workshop in March and Planning Commission and Council in April. We'll go over the substantive changes from HCD. There were more than I will get into the details of, but we found that the 3 programs that they recommended including were the biggest key items. And again, if you have questions about the other details, I'm happy to go over that more. Finally, we'll have a brief schedule slide and then go over any of your questions. The regional housing needs, the goals are to review the process, as I've just done, summarize what happened since we submitted the draft to HCD in April, and to
ask for your adoption of the housing element and the initial study negative declaration, which goes with it. The city was assigned 165 housing units to accommodate during the five-year period. Next slide, please. We analyzed these units, and as you can see, we came up with a surplus in all categories. This number has changed slightly since the draft, and that's primarily because of the addition of Program 1.5, which I'll talk about in a minute. So I believe you have this in your packet. If not, I'm happy to go over more details, but we did report to you on the public workshop comments previously from March, and then we also went to the Planning Commission in early April. We did make some revisions to the draft based on their input, and then came before you, I believe, April 21st. And we also took your comments into consideration and submitted the draft. So here are the three programs that we've added based on HCD's input. Program 1.5 has to do with the site on Atlantic City that was the subject of a program in the previous housing element. So in the previous housing element, it was required to rezone that site to accommodate the fourth cycle regional housing needs allocation. What HCD asked for this time is to actually amend the zoning on that site to allow a wider range of densities. So what the program proposes is to allow between 10 and 20 units per acre, which is consistent with the zoning on that site. Program 4.6 is another program to comply with state law. It's a bit of a follow-up program to the previous housing element. This one addresses the urban reserve zone, and primarily there's one site in that zone, I understand, and it does need to allow farm worker housing by right. Right now it's with are allowed with this permit, indeed are allowed somewhat consistently during the review, and HCD has this concern based on state law that certain findings are not as objective as they are looking for. So we can get into that more if you'd like. And finally, the Planning Commission didn't have a lot of comments. They did ask that we label the list of outreach in Appendix B, which was added based on HCD review. So we've gone ahead and done that so it's clear which meeting the outreach was associated with. And they did recommend forwarding the housing element and the initial study negative declaration to you. So just to remind you where we've been, and we're here before you today to look for your input and seek adoption of the housing element.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions of staff? Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Just a couple quick questions on that. One of which has to do with funding of the programs, the subsequent programs. Can we use the CDBG funds to effectively put forward? There's the three programs you outlined that needed some follow-up action. So can funds be used from this grant or these funds in order to pay for that?
No.
Thank you, State.
What? Another unfunded mandate?
Councilman or Pro Tem Lee, the answer to that is the funding that was applied for through CDBG was for planning and technical assistance grants. They're only to prepare documents in this case and not for implementation.
I will bite my tongue on that. Okay. The next question, there was a you represented that we had over for lack of a better term, an overabundance of stock in order to meet the 165. Did I understand that correctly? Because in looking at figure 4.1, I was kind of curious as to where we were going to get 165 housing units. Is it made up in, even though I know we're not supposed to say density, is it going to be made up in density of multifamily and so forth?
So actually, in the part of what PMC did this time was we went back and actually with staff, we went back and did an inventory of available lots. And in part through some of the rezones from the former RA zone, residential agriculture. An example would be 16th and Farrell, that residential project. Zoning it then to R1 created the ability for 48 additional homes. So through actions like that, we had a much greater inventory this time that far exceeded the 165 regional housing needs assessment. So what's ironic about that is that 5 years ago, we didn't have enough vacant lots, and that was one of the reasons that the opportunity site, the one on Atlantic City, was rezoned to R3.
And kind of going on that 16th and Farrell, if I'm in the right spot, that's Green Park, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so the fact that we've already got housing under construction there still qualifies?
The point that I was making is that 5 years ago in the last cycle, we couldn't take any credit for any inventory other than the, okay. I think it was two homes per acre or something. So we only got credit for 16 homes. Now we get credit for 48 homes as a result of the rezone and the action taken by the council.
Gotcha. Okay. And then just one more question is the farm worker requirement. That's basically just a state requirement. Do we have any farm worker housing?
No, we don't. When we created the urban reserve zone, primarily on the Okui property south of Highland, we did want to allow some flexibility in case there was some type of use that wanted to come forward in the interim prior to the specific plan that's required for the development of the site. So we threw in there, I'll say somewhat innocently, that maybe farm worker housing is something, an opportunity in the future. We made it subject to a use permit. Now HCD is telling us we need to revise that and make it by right. There have never been any discussions with the property owner, though, about farm worker housing.
Mayor, Councilmember Nichols, did you have questions?
That was my question on the farm housing. We got about four square blocks of empty space, and we have to put that in the plan. Does the city of San Francisco have to include that in their plan?
Ironically, they probably do. There are two sections to that Health and Safety Code law, which is, it's called the Employee Housing Act, and one of them actually requires that any zone that allows agricultural uses implement this, the portion of the law that HCD is asking Grover Beach to implement, and that could include backyard chickens or beekeeping. So I know they allow that in San Francisco. So it's a tricky law.
Previously, they've tacked on three. They, for all practical purposes, could have done that 5 years ago if they wanted to. So that's gotten simpler. Want to tack on a few things that aren't in the staff report because they don't belong in there, but they're relevant. As we've marched down the RENA number, I'm learning as my apprenticeship in the public process continues. Regional planners are sometimes overestimating these things. For the next cycle, my crystal ball says there will be a lower RENA number, but that's what we're using for this cycle, the 165. So expect to see that number come down. We notice some of these errors, but then we have a chance to fix them 5 years later. That's another thing I'm also learning as a part of the public process. But I just wanted to come up here and say what a great job the consultant did for this, and consider where we've been and what we have now, and I think that's just a great idea. Lastly, if you kept your eyes open reading the initial study, which was the most benign or inert thing you could possibly ever write about anything, if we were talking to our League of California Cities rep, we would encourage him, even though it's not the biggest priority they have, that the environmental review for a housing element should be categorically exempted, or whatever that phrase is. It makes absolutely no sense. Once you've read that initial study, you'll wonder, why are we doing this? You turn that first page, oh, here's a checklist. Oh, everything's left blank. There's 50 more pages. So something to consider if you are talking about regulations or rules that could be streamlined or made better, I would add that to the list. And that's my own personal comment. I bet other people have asked would share it, but I wouldn't put them on the spot. And so I hope you'll approve this fine document this evening. That's all I had to say.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to come forward?
I have a comment.
Well, we'll close public comment and then.
Well, I wanted to thank John. I think you've done an outstanding job, you and the rest of the Planning Commission, and really appreciate it. You really have done an excellent job, and I personally, and I'm sure the rest of the council, would agree that we thank you very much.
You said what I was going to say. Thank you. And I wanted to let you know, too, that I will be going up to the League of Cities Policy Committee meetings on housing on Thursday and Friday of this week. And so I will give you a call and get a little bit better understanding of what you're looking for, and I will pass that on. So that one we need a voice vote.
I would like to make a comment.
Oh, no, it's
as
a roll
well.
Call. Yeah. Oh, please. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's time for comments.
At the Housing Trust Fund meeting, we had a little talk about our housing element, and of all the cities that had a comment, we were the only one whose element was coming before their council by the end of June. Everyone else is talking October, November. So, anyway, I'm very pleased. I was very proud of our city.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much. It's amazing what a grant will do.
And it's true, you all do have a track record for trying to get out ahead of things. Sometimes that gets snowballed by the democratic process, but I appreciate that, too.
So
any other
thank
comments?
You. Thank you all.
Okay, in that case, then.
Do we need two motions on this, or can we handle it with one?
I would prefer two, since there's an environmental document involved.
Okay. Then, if I may, Mayor?
Please, yeah.
I would recommend that we adopt the resolution adopting the negative declaration.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols and seconded by Councilmember Bright. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. So that was unanimous. Did you want to make the second one as well?
And I move that we adopt the resolution adopting the 2014-19 housing element update.
I will second that as well.
Same again. Motion by Councilmember Nichols and second by Councilmember Bright. Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. So now we really are going to move to item number 5. That was unanimous. Development Code and Local Coastal Program Amendment, Development Application Permit Number 1112. The applicant is the City of Grover Beach, and it looks like Community Development Director Buckingham is going to present again. Is that right?
That's correct. Staff is requesting tonight that you open the public hearing and continue it to the July 7th meeting. Staff has been working with coastal staff on this, and we're close to finalizing those changes, and we are planning on bringing them to the Planning Commission at a special meeting on June 25th, followed by your July 7th council meeting. So, again, we would request you open the public hearing tonight, take no comments, and continue the item to July 7th.
Okay. So I just opened public comment and then...
Public information. Mm-hmm. This item will be continued to the date certain of July 7th at 6:30 in council chambers. It will not be republished. It will be re-noticed pursuant to regular agenda notification.
Thank you for that reminder. So the consent agenda, these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. Each item has the recommendation noted in parentheses. Members of the audience may speak on any items listed on the consent agenda, and any council member, the city attorney, or city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussion. Items withdrawn will be placed and heard at the end of the items previously scheduled on the regular business schedule. We have none at this time, so if there are any removed, we'll just take them right after after we hear the consent agenda. So I'm going to ask if anybody wants to remove anything from the consent agenda.
I have a question on 8, but we don't need to remove
okay.
it.
Okay, let's hear your question.
My one question is, I see that we're consolidating our general election with the county's general election, and that seems to be a process that happens at each election. Can we adopt something that says unless we don't consolidate it, we won't? No. It was worth a shot.
The short answer to copy Director Buckingham, no.
And I actually had a clarification on that one. I had some trouble reading the nomination process for candidates for elective office, and so I had asked after that paragraph, are we then saying that the filing period for the Office of Council Member is extended to Wednesday, August 13th for incumbents and non-incumbents? And I think the answer was just for non-incumbents. The incumbents still have to file by August 8th.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, great. So I think we're clear on that one. Does anyone want to make a motion?
I will make a motion that... I'm sorry?
I was going to say, did you want to potentially take public comment? I know.
Oh, sorry.
Young and
open for public comment. Did you have comments? Yeah, please do. I'm so sorry. Please comment. Gosh, you've waited all this time.
My name is Stacy Smith. I'm with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County, and you'll see that we're on the consent agenda tonight for Lowe's support and some funds for the Pismo Preserve. And I just wanted to acknowledge I was here at a previous meeting where you guys were trying to wrap your head around how you could support the project, knowing that you have limited funds and there's all these different things on your plates. So we just really want to thank you for doing this. We are so proud to put your name, your city stamp on this project and call you guys local supporters. And thank you for moving this forward.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come tonight. And thank you for catching that one. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the council for a motion.
Okay. Then I will now make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items as presented.
I'll second.
Moved by Councilmember Bright, seconded by Councilmember Marshall. And we'll need a roll call on that one.
Yes.
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 Yes, that's unanimous. And we have no regular business, no pulled consent items. So we're moving now to council committee reports. And this gives the mayor and council members an opportunity to present reports to the other members regarding committees, commissions, boards, special projects in which we may be participating. And so Council Member Bright always gets to go first.
I'm always so lucky.
Yes.
Well, the only committee meeting that I had in this recent past was the Housing Trust Fund, and I told you about how we bragged about us. And the other item of note was on the potential list of funding opportunities was for the Grover Beach Hotel, I guess is what it's called. Grover Beach Inn?
Inn.
Hmm. So there's a possibility that, I don't know, something's in the works there, possibly. So.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you. And Mayor Pro Tem Lee, did you have any reports?
Didn't have any reports on the IWMA or the Integrated Waste Management Authority or the Visit San Luis Obispo County boards. The Visit SLO board meets on Wednesday, so I'll update you at our next meeting. Did have a Five Cities Homeless Coalition meeting, mm-hmm. though, this past Monday, and they are moving forward with several grant applications to augment services within the area. So part of it is the Clap Road monies. Mm-hmm. And they're putting forward a series of dollars in order to augment services in the area, notwithstanding the other monies for a property. So
You mean the CLAP folks are giving us more money?
It's their
or giving the Homeless Coalition more money?
They're looking to provide the Homeless Coalition with some funding. What's the right way to say it? Not outside the purview of the other monies, but within that same purview. But I don't know if it's additional proceeds.
Sure, and integrating what we're doing in the county.
Okay.
And I noticed that it just, I'm not sure that the South San has been included very much in that process. And I just wanted to raise that and suggest that you just maybe raise that there if you can during board member comments or something. And because I know amongst the board themselves, there's been a lot of research on wastewater recapture and expansion, and you're spending quite a lot of money on consultants on all of that. But it doesn't seem to me as if they haven't been at the table and with this regional water management plan. And yet,
who mm-hmm. makes up the members of the regional of the IRW?
Now you're asking me hard questions.
Maybe somebody else knows.
Yeah.
Perhaps I can jump in here and
please.
City attorney, if I start to go too far afield, since we're not going to make any decisions, tell me if I need to stop. anytime along the way. Since the IRWM is part of what I do for my day job, with through grants and so forth, there's, I believe it's 23 different, it's either between the county, the cities, the districts, and I'd be surprised if the South County SAN isn't at least represented via one of the districts, if not them specifically.
Probably represented by another district. Yeah. They are represented obviously by Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, and we all have a seat. We have a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, they're represented. But in the other sense, I think that they've been working so hard at this, and I think maybe just because historically they haven't perhaps been in a position to do anything, they've been a little bit overlooked. So I just wanted to make sure that they're there that you at least ask if they feel they should comment on this report. Comments are due on the 7th, because I know that they do really want to cooperate regionally as much as possible.
Okay. So it's not so much why they weren't included.
I want them to be heard.
Is probably already into page 1500 by now.
I'm sure he's beat me. Yeah, I'm sure he has. He can read it a lot faster.
Yeah.
If I can just jump in, one other item on there is that there is a water conservation and a recycling component to the plan.
Okay.
And so there is an avenue for them to participate, or for all of us to participate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I don't recall seeing that, for instance, Morro Bay was on the list either. So, but I personally think you all should be at the table and making comments and getting involved in working out what we're going to work out with our water. Okay. So is that all you had?
That was it, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then Councilmember Nichols.
I have no committee report.
Okay. And mine, the only one I had was the SLO Council of Governments. It was a very full meeting, and it was a very productive meeting. The two most important takeaways for us were that they are working on a regional sedimentation management plan. They have a grant for it. So the board agreed that we could move forward with that. It's a critical thing for places like Port San Luis and Morro Bay that silt up. It's not as critical for us. It's pretty critical for Oceano, where they have that sandbar that silts up and floods the whole community, amongst other things, as you know, better than I. But for us, there's something, because if we don't get sedimentation, if it's building up behind Lopez and it's building up behind Twitchell Reservoir, then the ocean doesn't have quite as much fuel to create sand dunes. So there are some implications in sedimentation for us. The difference is they don't want it and we do. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out. And I did ask that they please be sure to get Oceano at the table there, and that that I might be interested too. So we'll see where that goes. The other thing that is sounds kind of fun is that the De Anza Trail is heading south. So they're starting to take requests for proposals for plans for the De Anza Trail through Edna Valley and through Price Canyon. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, De Anza is the guy who first came up and established the first missions along with the Padres, and discovered a whole lot of California and went right along our coast. Right through Oceano, right through Grover Beach. So that's kind of exciting. And that was all I had on SLOCOG. And so we're moving to Council Communications now, which is the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, I might add. Council Communications?
I just had a follow-up. Mm-hmm. At the last meeting, I had kind of put out a thoughts and prayers to mm-hmm. LMA. I just want to give you a quick little update on that, is that she came through the surgery with flying colors. So if you're following her on online, her pictures have gone from very frowning.
Other council member items? I had a few. I'm going to save the Coastal Commission one for the mayor or the city attorney, and I think you know the good news, but we'll have them announce it. I have asked the chamber to pull together with me a group of folks who can maybe see what we can do with local businesses to support the Huck Fest in October. And so we'll be probably going to be meeting on Friday, June 27th. And if anyone needs more information on that or wants to, you'll be joining us. Good. Great. That's super. Then we're happy to provide that. And I did also attend a nice lunch. The Five Cities Fire Authority was speaking to the Five Cities Christian Women, and they have a monthly potluck, and they were meeting in the Grover Beach Presbyterian Church. And Battalion Chief Heath did admirably when the acting chief got called out on a call and fielded a whole lot of questions on dispatch and weed management and smoke detectors and carbon monoxide alarms, and also why they attend medical emergencies. And it's because we only have two ambulances in town, and if you have someone who's coded, you need more than two people. So that was useful information, and just nice to have them all working locally together. And I believe that was... Oh, I did want to ask if you all... you know, the responses to this integrated regional water management plan are due by the 7th of July, which doesn't give folks, doesn't give cities much chance or political bodies much time to agendize it. And I didn't know where, how things are going with Zone 3 or with the RAC, and whether or not the council would be interested in making any comments on that report. It's fairly significant, fairly significantly related to whether or not we have water in Grover Beach. So I wanted to see if the council wanted to agendize that item. It would have to be on the 25th, yeah, if we're going to respond by the 7th of August.
And I would need to...
7th of July, excuse me. The 7th of July. I'm ahead of myself.
And I would need to recuse myself from that discussion.
Right.
And you would be our best source.
Yeah. Well, you can, what, 2,000 pages?
It's interesting.
Well, it is actually very interesting and kind of relevant.
Madam Mayor, yeah. Can I at least ask the Public Works Director? I know that deadline is July 7th. Is that absolutely firm? I mean, if we were to comment on July 7th, would those comments go unheard at that particular point?
I don't think they'd go unheard. The process seems to be a little bit flexible, and I know Councilmember Lee can't comment on that, but from what I've seen so far, comments have streamed in. As long as I think you meet the deadline for the RAC to review those comments and determine how they'll be integrated into the plan itself, I think you're probably okay from what I see. So maybe have a day or two after the 7th.
So we could have our meeting on the 7th and get a letter off?
Well, staff would prefer that we not agendize it for the 25th. I mean, as you've indicated, there's a pretty significant piece of work, and if we're going to be of any value in assisting with that response, I think it would be better on the 7th.
Well, I think everybody here needs time to digest some of it, too.
Councilman, so. City Manager, please, I can make more inquiries on that tomorrow and try to get a better sense of how much time we would have to put something together.
And I can provide a little direction, or a little, I'll say a little clarification, no direction on that, is that the state is requiring that the plan be adopted by, I think it's August 12th, in order for the county and various agencies to apply for some grant funding. And so there is a shortened time frame from what the state required initially. So it will be done, it'll be considered by the Board of Supervisors on August 12th, I believe the schedule is.
Okay. Do you feel it would be useful for us to do a review of that?
I think it would be useful for council to be aware of and familiar with portions of it. I mean, it is an integrated regional water management plan, so it covers a very large geographic area. I think if you were specifically interested in the geographic area that directly affects your water supply and use of those water supplies, as well as some of the other items that are in that, because we have a consultant who works on our behalf through the Northern Cities Management Area, we have collectively provided comments to our consultant, who has also provided, the consulting company has some higher-level water experts on there who have also reviewed it on our behalf. I think what might be useful is if I could, and I can hopefully find this out in the next day or so, whether our consultant could provide back to you a good
set of got comments that are relative to potentially what the council's concerns are.
That's what I'm thinking. A set of comments relative to this, again, Jim's geographic region, issues that you might want to be concerned with, and perhaps provide you that directly related Reader's Digest version, maybe, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's something I can check into tomorrow and see if that can be brought forward.
Madam Mayor, what I would do is suggest that Greg work with me and you allow us to put together an item for the 7th as we see fit and appropriate.
And I'm not suggesting that you give us a copy of the 2,000-page
right.
report
no, no.
because you can download it by sections on the county site. And so you can just link us to those if we want further information. And the public can be linked. Okay. All righty. So, okay.
Good.
Right. So if there are no other council communications, we will move to the city manager's reports and comments.
Yes, obviously there are a couple of things to report on. First of all, just as a reminder, we've talked a lot about it thus far, but June 25th is a special meeting, and we'll be talking about polling results relative to the general obligation bond issue and pavement update. I would certainly encourage that the word get out relative to that discussion. It's a very important one. We will be filming that one, so it'll be available on Channel 20 as well. Secondly, I just wanted to follow up briefly. The Public Works Director and myself will be meeting with staff members from Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and the county, largely relative to the surplus water issue. It's, again, a follow-up to the facilitation that's been provided in part by Adam Hill. I'm not sure that we'll make any progress, but we're at least meeting and discussing, so... we'll keep you updated on whatever progress we do make there. Finally, the good news is obviously the Coastal Commission last Wednesday, we saw the end of the very long planning process for the Lodge and Conference Center. You actually have an entitled project in hand after probably 30 years and more directly, at least the last 8 or 10 years of work. It went to the meeting, as the mayor knows, went very well, and I've never seen such a positive staff report offered by Coastal Commission staff. That was great. It was supported by State Parks and their attorney. Obviously, you had your staff there and available as well. So it was actually a positive time in front of the Coastal Commission. And stress, I must say, was somewhat minimized. So we're on to the next phases, which will be moving ahead with the financing agreement and Pacifica on their part. Will need to begin their working drawings, et cetera. City Attorney, do you have anything to add?
I wonder if I could add, too, that Coastal Commissioner Howell, who's on the Pismo City Council, was very supportive and made both motions and spoke
right.
on our behalf and was very helpful in helping us understand the process, too. So thanks to him. Any other comments, City Manager?
No, that's
okay.
it.
Okay. And I wanted to clarify, too, why I had mentioned the Five Cities Christian Women, because they have in Grover Beach a food pantry that mm-hmm. we've heard information on in the past, so I thought I'd just give you a little update on them. And City Attorney's reports and comments. Okay, so then we have a closed session, if you could tell us about that.
It's the intent of the council to meet in closed session on three items, first two being labor negotiation, meeting with labor negotiators, both for Gore Beach Police Officers Association and SCIU. The third one being conference with real property negotiators with regard to Digital West Network and potential price in terms of leases of right-of-way.